CBS World News brings you the early morning reports of its correspondents for the news of the world on Friday, May 22nd. Today we shall call in the British capital and try to get you other direct reports by shortwave radio from somewhere in Australia and from Moscow. In addition, Harry Marble will give you the latest developments from points not covered by our pickups. But first, here are the headlines this morning. Successful naval action against the Japanese is reported from Australia, while the enemy has increased offensive activity in China. In Russia, the Red Army continues its steady advance in the Kharkov sector. In this hemisphere, Mexico may declare war against the Axis at any moment. At home, there's a good possibility that income taxes will be partly collected directly from pay envelopes. And now, Harry Marble.
Before calling in Australia this morning, here is the situation in China and on the Burmese border. From Chongqing comes a report that the Japanese have landed 25,000 troops in Fujian province, just south of Chekiang, with the apparent aim of trying to knock out China this summer, or at least eliminating possible air bases which might be used by the Allies for air raids on Japan and Formosa. In this connection, Brigadier General Chenault, leader of the American volunteer group of flyers, predicted that the United States could wipe out the Japanese air fleet if we could send 2,000 aircraft to the Far East. Meanwhile, in Yunnan province adjoining Burma, the fighting apparently has reached a stalemate. Our first report from overseas this morning comes from the Southwest Pacific. After a brief pause, we take you to Australia.
Situation Australia. William J. Dunn reporting. The news that an Allied submarine or submarines has sunk a Japanese cruiser of the Kako class, as well as two large cargo ships in underwater action, claims and gets first attention in the Australian press today. The fact that Allied planes staged another successful attack on land, destroying three planes and damaging two on the ground, is concerning to a relatively secondary position in the news of the day. His individual actions, the underwater fight was undoubtedly the more spectacular, and the loss of another 8-inch bomb cruiser is a serious blow to the Japanese. There are plenty of reasons, however, for regarding the series of Allied attacks on land, Rabaul, Timor, and the Louisiana Archipelago as the most important offensive mission now being handled by the Allies out here. These vital Japanese bases will play an important part in the disposition of any further attempts by the Japanese to move south. The Japanese themselves have proved by all argument the futility of fleet operations against adequate land-based plane defenses without sufficient air strength to meet the opposing air forces. And the only way the Japanese can assure themselves of the air strength necessary to cover an important fleet movement in this direction is through the maintenance of advanced air bases along the route the waterborne force is scheduled to follow. The Japanese have those bases at Lae, Rabaul, and Timor, as well as the Solomon. There has been official Allied communique reference to a temporary enemy base in the Louisiana group. It is no secret that the Allies have been making every effort to reinforce these bases, and to some extent, they have been succeeding. Consequently, the Allied blows at the position, if continued in sufficient strength, can become the most important achievement since the Coral Sea repulse. If the Allied force could succeed in decommissioning one or more of even enemy advanced bases, the loss to the Japanese would be infinitely greater than the loss of several cruisers. Those ever present optimists who foresee immediate danger to Japan in the wide dispersal of their forces throughout the Far East, and who ever lengthening lines of communication which spread fanwise from Nagasaki, should pay particular attention to the latest landing by enemy forces in the Chinese coast near Funchal. The fact that the Japanese, in the midst of all their other activities, can pile men, ships, and materials sufficient for another major offensive can be taken as an indication that the enemy possibly isn't fearing the pinch of wide dispersal as keenly as had been hoped. And informal observers continue to point out that with all her extended lines throughout this part of the world, Japan is still operating on the interior line, and that our own are of necessity even longer and as vulnerable. It is still too early to start tabulating the fruits of victory in the Pacific. This is William J. Dunn in Australia, returning to CBS, New York.
Next, across the Atlantic to the British capital. We take you now to London.
CBS London, Bob Trott reporting. During the night, a few enemy planes came in over the coasts of England and Scotland and flew a short distance inland, but so far, no report of any bombs being dropped. London's military circles, surveying the Kharkov front, say today that the German counterattack coming north to Izium has taken a bite out of the big Russian salient, but there is no reason to think that this German penetration will increase or will even be able to remain where it is. As far as London can tell, the danger of this German counterattack has not increased since the attack was first made. And London's military circles do not know whether the Russians attacking in the Kharkov area have been able to break all the way through the deep German defenses and penetrate into open country. The chief of Britain's Imperial General Staff, General Sir Alan Brooke, after a visit to Northern Ireland to inspect American troops, tanks, and other equipment, said, "With that gear and equipment and the men behind them, there is little doubt that we shall see very great things from the United States forces when the opportunity is given to them, and no doubt that will come." The Ministry of Works and Buildings announces that tomorrow the public swimming season opens in Hyde Park. In the middle of the city, the little bathing tents will be open for business again alongside that lake called the Serpentine. Another sign that, although spring seems just to have arrived, summer is almost here. It still seems destined to go down in history as the decisive summer for the whole world. But among people who discuss the war seriously in London, there is no easy belief that the decision is bound to go the right way. True, the mood of Britain is one of cautious optimism, but it is not only cautious, it is based on such facts as that announced yesterday by Minister of Labour Bevan, that Britain has mobilized manpower to a higher point than any other nation at any other time. It is based, this cautious optimism, on the belief that this mobilized man and woman power will continue to work and fight with a sense of the greatest urgency, knowing that time is short and the situation grave. Dispatches from the United States tell us today that in some American cities, there is now flourishing the comfortable confidence that the war will end this year. For Britain, it seems obvious enough that this kind of complacency is just what the Germans want. The Axis worked long and hard to keep America complacent before Pearl Harbor. Since that Sunday in December, the Axis has worked long and hard to lull America back into that half sleep which made Pearl Harbor possible. Another doze at the switch will bring another and bigger Pearl Harbor. Probably the Axis does not quite hope to put the United States really asleep. Perhaps the best the Germans can hope for is the creation in the United States of that easygoing optimism which says the war will end this year whether we hurry or not. So why hurry? Why make more planes and guns and tanks than may be necessary? Of course, if all the United Nations do exert themselves to the utmost day after day, we might end this war before 1943. Miracles do happen. And if the United States wins this war this year, it will be a miracle. This is Bob Trout in London, returning you to CBS in New York.
In just a moment, we'll try to contact Moscow. Meanwhile, a dispatch from Vichy, France, says the French Admiralty announced today that the 1,379-ton submarine, L'Aero, has been missing since May 5th. Now for the news from Russia, we take you by way of San Francisco for a broadcast direct from Moscow.
CBS, Moscow. Friday, May 22nd.
Morning,
3 p.m. Diary of Sir reporting. The big three-day test battle on a sector of the Ukraine is still going on today. But this morning, the fight was losing its intensity. The ferocity of the battle is said to be telling on the Germans, with their tank men showing signs of cracking. The German resistance is losing its stubbornness against the force of Soviet tanks, artillery, and infantry. And the Germans have suffered heavy losses in tanks. The battle is proving the correctness of the new Soviet theory of mechanized warfare. Heretofore, it was thought that in battle against tanks, only technically trained tank busters should take part. That is, artillery, airplanes, and of course, tanks. While the infantry devoted itself to fighting off the enemy infantry. But the new Soviet theory is that the infantry itself should enter the battle against tanks with anti-tank rifles, grenades and bottles of inflammable fluid. And the course of the biggest tank battle of spring 1942 is showing the effectiveness of the Red Army theory that tanks can be just as vulnerable against courageous infantry as they are against tanks airplanes and large caliber artillery. Still reporting a German offensive on their flank, Timoshenko's forces are stalling ahead, and the tempo of the Ukrainian increasing in velocity. A heat wave is now gripping the flat Ukrainian prairies. Hot, sun-drenched, winter days. The birds of the Germans used to welcome. Marching infantry and bombing tanks raise cries of dust in their wake. The shallowness of the battle is turning the fertile Ukraine into a dust bowl. The smoke of battle hangs heavy over the trucks. The acrid fumes of black cordite sting the nostrils of the fighting men. Everywhere, the rolling bellow of the artillery cannonade resounds like the approach of a summer thunderstorm. The Russo-German war ended in 12 months to death. On the military side, the war has passed through three stages. First, when the hitherto invincible Germans attacked and manned their third and eighth attack, the first cavalry. Then came the first German setback of the Second World War. More than 40 divisions were held up in front of Leningrad. And then Hitler decided that his main target would be Moscow itself. And he marshaled 51 divisions against the Soviet capital. However, none of the staff and forces in the south and recaptured Rostov. Leningrad refused to surrender, and Moscow became the city that most of their time. The change in the course of the war is visibly reflected from the faces of the people of Rostov. Their broad, open faces have become cheerful.
We regret that the signal from Moscow is not of broadcast quality. We return you now to Columbia in New York. Back in New York, and American shipyards celebrating Maritime Day today give their answer to the submarine raiders by launching 27 ships, the most for one day since World War I. A Pacific Coast shipyard opened the celebration by launching a ship 1 minute after last midnight. The launchings follow throughout the day. One yard had three launchings. 6 yards launched 2 ships each, and 12 yards launched 1 each. The Maritime Commission originally planned to observe Maritime Day with 30 launchings, but speed-ups in production sent 3 of the 30 down the ways earlier this week. Maritime Day, the anniversary of the departure of the Savannah from Savannah, Georgia, on the first crossing of the Atlantic by a steamship, this year finds the nation facing probably the most critical shipping situation in its history. The demands of a global war and the submarine raids off the American coast make the need for ships even more urgent than in 1917 and 18. 4 new ships were placed in service today, and the Maritime Commission said shipyards are now averaging 2 ships a day, the best production record for 25 years. Mexico appears close to a declaration of war against the Axis powers as a result of the sinking of a Mexican tanker off the Florida coast last week. At any moment now, a statement is expected from President Camacho, and it is rumored that he has prepared a manifesto asking the Mexican Congress to declare war. Meanwhile, the situation has been further aggravated by reports that 2 more Mexican vessels have been torpedoed. Orders have been issued to the commanders of all military zones to remain at their posts.